Welcome to the lighter side of the dark side. It's your weekly freak show here on Renegade Radio and Spotify, all podcast catchers, YouTube as well. I'm Dark Mark, the goth comedian, and as always, my co-host, everybody's favorite horror writer, Nicole Six.
Good evening.
Hi there, Nicole. Hi there, Mark.
I'm Hi, Nicole. See, you better stop that or else you're going to get punished. You talk when I tell you to talk. I'm kidding. Yeah, we have a guest here. And Nicole, I told you the story. How unbelievable is this story?
It's pretty wild.
People keep asking me what this show is about. And it is the lighter side of the dark side. But basically, in a nutshell, is we try to interview interesting and unusual people. Right, Nicole?
Yes.
We've got somebody very interesting.
It's so much fun that I fall into that category now. I'm like, oh, yes, I'm an interesting and unusual person.
Welcome to the club. She has written a book, and this book, I got to tell you, makes 50 Shades of Grey look like Dr. Seuss. On an emotional level, on a writing level, and also on a sexual level. And it's called Surviving Master Joshua, the BDSM Memoir of an Unfaithful Life. Here she is, Karma Said.
The unfaithful wife in the flesh.
There's so much to this story, and I can't wait to unpack it. And I really need to be alert when I'm talking to you because there's so many things I need to remember. So this is why I'm drinking this.
Yay.
If I can get it in camera. I'm not even going to try putting it in camera. I'm going to put the picture of it in post. But
It's in camera.
Here it is. Ray's energy drink. This is the best energy drink. I've tried them all. This is the best. And this
You're big enough to have commercials. I made it to the big time.
There's two more commercials to come, but this one is the best. Wow. I don't know if you drink energy drinks, Karma, but I do. And this is the best. And Nicole tried this. This is the new juice box flavor.
It was delicious.
I'll give it a try.
It's delicious. The best part of Ray's energy drink, zero calories, zero carbs, zero crash.
I don't believe the zero crash, really?
Really? No, trust me.
I have no crash from it. I mean, I also had mixed with vodka, so if you were going to crash, that'd be the time to do it.
Right.
No crash.
It mixes very well with vodka, and I'm telling you, you don't crash. You just stay alert all the time. Yeah. And matter of fact, speaking of that, Nicole and I were talking a mile a minute after the show, and we were just full of energy right after we had that energy drink and hanging out with our guests last week. So if you go to the description on the podcast catcher or on YouTube, you'll get 15% off a case of Ray's energy drink, any flavor you like.
So all right, you got one customer. And one customer you already got.
Here's the story. Now, Karma Said is not your real name. I know how you got the name, and we're going to get to that later in the story. But you were a reporter, and I want to do this as linear as I can, but I know there's going to be, we're going to be going back and forth. You were a reporter. Now, for a conservative publication, we cannot name, but when you say conservative, is this like a right-wing news, a right-wing magazine or a right-wing newspaper or a blog, or what type of publication was this?
It is a center-right, religiously conservative, ethnic publication.
I see.
Okay. I'm getting the picture. So, and so it was very religious, and
not very.
It was valued.
It had like family values.
It was a faith-based sort of news outlet. And what type of stories did you cover before this?
I can't get too deep into my work because thing that people can intersect with. So
right.
I can't go too deep into my work, but it is, I specialized in lifestyle stories. So the evolvement into a different lifestyle is kind of like on my beat. I always had my stories had a certain outsider aspect to them. Like I liked Gonzo reporter, you know?
Right.
So
you were kind of the Hunter S. Thompson for the faith-based conservative crowd.
Exactly. So I was like their they're token weirdo. They're token liberal weirdo in the
paper. Oh, okay.
Me and Mark are used to that.
Well, yeah. Well, we are. We are not. And in some circles that we go through, we're the normal people.
And I don't know any like that for me.
Well, you're going to hang out with us, and trust me, we know all the clubs. Matter of fact, I was listening to a podcast. You were talking about going to DomCon, and we know Mr. Cyan and Sanctuary here in LA is just about to open up. Mm-hmm. I will tell Cyan you said hi. Now, but had you done anything this sexual or this
never
out before out that? There? Right,
never. It was completely by accident. I never meant to do anything sexual.
Were you assigned, or were you assigned? Hey, token weirdo at the conservative convocation. We got a story about an S&M, and let me tell you what the story is, Nicole, because we're both journalists.
Go.
This is Master Joshua, who is in the New York scene, a very big, he's a very established dom in the New York scene, and he was being Me Too. He was accused of, what was he accused of specifically?
Well, I didn't start out searching for that story. I went.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes, I went in. That's step two. So I went in looking for religious figures in the kink scene, and a coworker in this publication referred me to Master Joshua's then partner, who organized kink parties for a variety of people and had a lot of connections. And she said, "Yeah, I got a lot of." I got everything for you. I got priests. I got Hasids in kennels. I got sikhs in drinking kosher wine and getting bottles stuffed up their butt. I got everything you might want.
It's always nice to have a connection that knows where they stick Manischewitz up people's asses. So that's good. And we have a couple connections around here too. So you were getting Christians, you were getting Jews, Muslims, I'm assuming, possibly.
We talked about it on a phone conversation. It was a joking conversation. She was just saying, like, I could get you anything.
Right. How many religious figures did you come across in the scene? Like as far as.
Plenty, but that story dropped. Getting this. That was step one, like I said. Mm-hmm. It began there, and I began doing the research there. But as I did the research, accusations of sexual harassment and misconduct against Master Joshua surfaced. Now, his partner was the person who brought me in, but Master Joshua quickly became the speaker because he's just that kind of guy. And he was the one guiding me. So once I realized that there are accusations against him, of course, the story changed. Mm-hmm. Right? I was like, I can't run with a story where you're featured heavily and you are my main source while there are public accusations hanging above your head. But the person who pointed these accusations up to me, they were just a set of posts on FetLife, which were reposted in Facebook and which kind of created their own, you know, little shitstorm. But they were just posts by a former play partner of his.
Mm-hmm.
So the person who referred me to it said, you know, there's a better story for you here than religious people in the kink scene. You could explore what the Me Too movement did to the kink scene, how it's playing out in the kink scene.
Mm-hmm.
Because the kink scene being completely in this different set of ethics and behaviors than the vanilla world.
Absolutely.
Had to kind of reform its own rules to the Me Too movement, right? You can't.
That's what I was wondering. I mean, what is appropriate now for a dom and what is not?
Right, exactly. That's exactly what the crux of the story was. It was sort of like, that's why the story interested me. I wasn't so much after Joshua, but more trying to understand as an outsider. It's hard to understand even as an insider, but as an outsider trying to understand, well, how can you tell what's appropriate or not in a place where everybody seems to be acting inappropriately as a sort of base level? I mean, there, of course, once you're in, you understand there are rules, there's etiquettes, mm-hmm. there's There's laws
but there's also pushing of boundaries.
Right.
That's inherent in the whole thing.
Exactly. So how do you deal with it in such a charged environment? Right. That was the second story I was stepping in. And Master Joshua was indeed the centerpiece of it because mm-hmm. He was in a fascinating situation where, mm-hmm. According to him, he was just doing what people do in the BDSM scene. Like, mm-hmm. you know, how can you tell when it's rape play or rape?
In my case, that's when I say ouch, but I don't know in that context. But now you were actually, if I have this correct, and correct me if I'm wrong, if I don't, you actually became intrigued in the S&M scene after you read 50 Shades of Grey. Or were you intrigued before then?
I was always intrigued, but 50 mm-hmm. Shades kind of brought up. First, let me save my reputation here by saying I did not find 50 Shades of Grey to be either good literature or good S&M. But,
well, now that you know the real, I mean, you know that it's it's Twilight fan fiction. It was somebody that wrote Twilight fan fiction. And yeah,
Twilight is written back.
but you know that's how that book started.
Yes.
Yeah, yes. So,
I get it.
And you know, and everybody's got to start somewhere. I mean, I don't have any judgment on people that started with 50 Shades of Grey. There's a lot of people that did.
I feel bad because, I mean, I have a certain amount of judgment because the holy cow. I really got upset at the holy cow. It's inappropriate. Whatever you're doing, whatever your kink is, saying holy cow when a dick comes towards you is just wrong, I feel. It's just, you know, why is she saying holy cow? Is she sick?
Well, maybe it's an udder, not a dick. I don't know. Maybe that's why she's saying holy cow. I have no idea. I know I say holy cow every time a dick comes towards my mouth. Well, wait a second, did I say that out loud? I'm sorry. But what I'm saying is everybody's got to start somewhere. So when you got into the scene, you saw that what it's really like. Now,
true that.
Nicole and I, we are sort of on the outskirts of the scene. We're not lifestylers, mm-hmm. but we've been in fetish clubs. We have a lot of friends that are in the fetish community, the LA fetish community.
I mean, I know I've had sex with dominating partners, and I've also had sex with submissive partners. So I know what it's like. I just, it's very.
I have my riding crop at the ready just in case.
But I mean, it's different depending what people are into. I find that I prefer to be submissive than dominating, but I also enjoy I don't mind smacking a guy on the ass or giving a good blowjob or like taking charge in the bedroom. I just, when it came to whipping, I kind of didn't know how hard I got. I have a hard time putting too much into it because I don't want to put too much into it. I don't want to hurt the other person. So it kind of distracts me from the sex because in the back of my mind, I'm worried about hurting the other person.
And so let me just backtrack for a moment. For me, my entry, though it's a highly sexual scene, there was never any sex involved for me. Mm-hmm. And when it came to out the scene, you know, a group of people in a public area, it was...
Well, there's never any sex for that. It's not allowed. Or maybe it is in New York. It's not allowed here.
Okay. Well, still, it's not... It isn't about... it wasn't about hitting people. The first party I went to, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I went to a party. Joshua opened the door for me. He was like... Mm-hmm. He was like, you know, if you're going to be writing on about this stuff, you should definitely see what it is first.
Yes.
Because I had no experience at all, no real life connection to the thing in any way. So he said, come, meet the people, watch a play party, and interview them afterwards. I came there, and the people spoke about their religions and their connection between kink and religion, how their values and beliefs interact with their kinks and their kinky lives and their kinky values and beliefs. And I got to see them a little bit as people, as humans. And then they went out of the door and came back in... you know, in gear and costume mm-hmm. and leather mm-hmm. on all mm-hmm. fours and collars and leashes mm-hmm. And dog masks and like looking like a combination of a leather freak show. Like, you know, I was like, what the? you're the same people I met before. You're the CEOs and shit.
I'm assuming that you had the same experience I had, meeting people in the scene, is that they're some of the most intelligent people that I've ever met.
Eventually, but just that for me, it was the first time.
Right.
Connecting between normal people and the scene, and how it looked like the scene when it looked visceral, you know.
No, it definitely
is. Then I watched them play, and when I watched people play, particularly when I watched Joshua play, it was just so raw and elemental and alive. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I was stunned. It spoke to me it was like a waking up in a way, because I was like, this is how people connect. I've never seen it before, but this is how people in real time are exactly who they are with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no masks, and there's no ceremonies, and there's no
there is, literally, in a way.
Yes.
I mean, but honestly, I mean, that's, everybody has several masks that they wear. People have masks with their friends. People have masks with their lovers. People have masks with their families. You know, everybody's a few different people all at once.
Right. True. And people have masks in the scene too. But
absolutely. People have literal masks in the scene.
Speaking as one.
Yes.
But coming in there and seeing how they just drop everything, all the hi, nice to meet you, I'm such and such, here's my card, you know. It's just a raw exchange. That's how it looked like to me, coming in for the first time. Mm-hmm. And it really spoke to me.
Right.
And I was like, these are my people. I don't know where I was until today, but these are my people.
I had a similar experience. Yeah, I had a similar experience finding fetish through the goth scene, although I'm not somebody that plays in public, and I'm not really a lifestyler. But what I found odd, and correct me if I'm wrong, I'm trying to gather this from what I've read and what I've seen, is that you and Joshua had a sexual relationship before you had a master-slave relationship. Is that right?
Yes.
Because that's unusual. That's unusual because, as I say, there's a lot of S&M activity. A lot of it is, I mean, it's sexual and people are getting turned on, but it's not sexual in that they're inserting anything into anything.
Well, that didn't happen in a club. That happened, our relationship evolved through the journalist interviewee connection first, right? Mm-hmm. We just met and talked.
Mm-hmm. The connection I'm trying to have with you right now.
Yeah. Luckily, you're far away.
That's what a lot of girls say.
All right, demon, calm down.
So you're bringing out my side. This is now I'm getting my raw side. Okay, let me whip myself.
We're on air.
Yeah, I'm whipping myself. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I don't know who's Nicole to you. We're on air. There's another woman here. Please respect. Anyway, where were we? It took
How the sexual relationship developed.
Joshua and I knew each other for a year before that happened.
Mm-hmm.
A year in which we met often. So it wasn't like we just threw our clothes off in a club or something.
What did you like about him? What was the interest there?
Oh, well, first you got to meet him. He's extremely charismatic, and he's sexy, and he's hot. And I'm watching him. The first time I watched a BDSM scene, he was like in the middle of it, like just doming.
Yeah.
Looking like he was, you know, born for the role. He's a rock star. It comes off him in waves. He's just like a pheromone machine. You can't, you know, watch him, meet him. You won't have to ask. It's sort of like it's kind of like, how do you not fall in love with that? It's like if you're like this timid little wallflower walking into a scene for the first time and he puts his eyes on you, it's just like, you know, it's just like this 100,000 watt glare, just, and you're in it. It's a magnet. You wouldn't know. It's what is it?
Oh, Nicole would know. She's met charismatic men.
Yeah, that scene, such as myself.
But no,
in a high school movie. You know, it's that scene in I don't know, that high school movie. What is that? Pretty in Pink or something?
Right. But let me ask you, was he the first guy you saw doing a scene?
He was among, I mean, that night was the first time I saw live scenes.
Right. But did you have any other attraction to other men doing scenes?
Listen, I walked in, I watched a bunch of people scene,
mm-hmm.
right? And he was among them, and he was the organizer, and he was the person I was interviewing. Right. So he was the only one I had contact with later on, simply by circumstances.
Because I think what Nicole's getting at is, what separated him from the other Doms?
Yes.
For you.
I never met other Doms. I still haven't.
So you never actually had, had interaction with other Doms away from the scene then. I get that. Okay.
Like he was my kind of guide, kind of from the moment I put my foot in the door.
Mm-hmm.
He was my source and my interviewee, but very soon I began asking questions that were offbeat because I was so attracted to it. And he was the guy who opened the door to me. He was like, and he just fell instantly into the role. He just became a mentor very quickly. It's sort of like, I remember those first days, it was weird. I was so confused. I didn't understand what was happening to me. It was like I became a vampire or something. You know, I couldn't sleep. I was walking around. I was thinking nonstop about it. I was like thinking about all my past experiences and thinking maybe this means, you know, just kind of like something turned over in my head. And I was like, who am I? What's happening to me?
And I'm not saying that he did, but you can see to somebody who's not familiar with the situation and not seeing this in real time, how some people could think he might have taken advantage of you.
How so? I mean, wait, I get it. I'm not saying.
I'm not saying that he did, but I'm saying you could see to the untrained eye, if they looked at it, they're like, wait a second. He's your source for this whole world that you have nothing to do with. And he's kind of being a guru to you. And he had other lovers and other play partners.
True that.
Because in the book, you say, you finally said that you were in love with him. And he's like, I love you too. Like I love all my partners.
Wow, I have an interview with somebody who actually read the book. That's dangerous. Okay, I get you. Yes,
and has a writing crop. But go ahead.
It goes along the right. You know, like I said, you're on video. You cannot use that thing on your camera without harming your camera.
You want to bet? No, go ahead. No, but what I was going to say is, I mean, that's got to be devastating because you worked off and all the while, and we haven't even touched on this. You're a married woman with two young kids.
Yep.
And you muster up the courage to finally, and as I said, this evolved over a year's time to say, I love you. Mm-hmm. And which is the most vulnerable thing you can say to a person. And you were reciprocated in a way and in a way you were not. Because he did say he loved you, but he said he loved you not in the way
I love
you
all
loved
my
him.
Yes, right. I love all my play partners. Well, I'm sorry, Master Joshua. Karma got you for that one.
Mm-hmm.
It's on air now. Yes, he was. That was. To be fair, there's a lot there that was happening between us that didn't make it to the book. So that actually did happen. But there was always this pull, right? Where he was sort of like, listen, kiddo, I am Polly. You are not my first priority at the moment. You might be madly in love, but I do this with a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And
poly and pansexual.
Yeah. So I do this. This is what I do.
Mm-hmm.
And while he was not, I think, trying to be offensive with that piece of information, I think he was trying to keep it front and center, that there is not going to be any kind of fairy tale. I'm not gonna, you know, throw him on the back of my white horse and gallop away with him.
Right.
And that took, that was a hard and long lesson to learn, that the ideals of love that you come with growing up in a completely, you know, vanilla monogamous setting and living most of your life in a vanilla monogamous setting and then falling in love with somebody who lives through poly is a hard lesson, because you have to learn it's not about you or about him. It's about relationships. It's about connecting to multiple people. And
I can never commit to someone who is poly. I could have like a casual relationship with them, but in an actual relationship, I need more security than I would be able to be provided. My jealousy just wouldn't allow it. Like when I'm casually dating someone, they can see whoever they want to see. That doesn't bother me. We're not like relying on each other for emotional, an emotional relationship. It's more of a physical thing. But when you get that emotional relationship where you like are in a place where your heart relies on their heart, I think that poly is a little too difficult for me personally.
It was very difficult. And it is at times very difficult. But the thing you learn from it is, I mean, it makes you, if it doesn't kill you, it makes you stronger kind of thing, because it makes you very self-reliant in a way. It teaches you to refocus your being and who you are and what experience you are having right now. Because what is jealousy? Jealousy is putting your attention on something you are lacking.
Yeah.
Sort of like somebody else has this and I do not have it.
Because jealousy is also insecurity. And with a poly relationship, if you are not ready for it, you will find yourself very insecure throughout that.
I suffered a lot from it, but the books say I survived.
You did. Well, and I will tell you what also doesn't kill you but makes you stronger is Renegade CBD. If you go to renegadecbd.com for all your CBD needs, the website is up now, and you can get gummies, you can get cigarettes, you can get all sorts of things infused with CBD, chocolate. Nicole's tried it. She can vouch for it.
I have tried all of it. It's delicious. Everything that's edible is tasty as hell.
They have bath bombs. They have everything. So go to
the
Renegade.
Bath bomb was luxurious.
Have some CBD. It'll relax you. It'll chill you out. If you're insecure, it'll do wonders. So go to renegadecbd.com. Now, here's the thing. Yes.
That was awesome, man. That was awesome. That was the smoothest plugging I ever saw.
The thing about the BDSM is it turns people on. I've had people come over to my house and we start playing and it ends up in sex. And then afterwards they're like,
I don't get it.
No. Afterwards they're like, I didn't plan on having sex tonight, but they were just that turned on. That's happened a few times. And
maybe it's just you.
Well, what can I say? But you did get the name Karma in a very unusual way. Tell everybody how that happened.
Well, the name Karma was derived from when Master Joshua invited me to interview him, and it went to the whole Me Too sexual abuse allegation stuff. He asked me, after I started digging and started laying out the material and all, he said, you know what? Me and my partner, we've been through a lot, and I feel like another delve in this whole sexual abuse allegation things, it's just gonna kill us. Can you please not publish this? And I said, you know what? You brought me in. You opened the door to me. I don't want to harm you in return. So I'll drop it. But tell me, why would you invite a reporter into your life when you got this cloud of shit hanging over your head in such public view? And he was like, I trust karma to protect me. And I was like, it is not karma protecting you, you know. It's me. I'm protecting you. So when it came time to choose the pseudonym, I was like, you know what? Karma said that. My name will be Karma Said.
The moment that it turned sexual and you're a married woman, I mean, what was going through your mind when you finally committed to it? I'm assuming you kissed a little bit and you did other things and you played, but when it finally came to sex, what was going through your mind?
Well, I was pretty careful. If you read the book, you saw it happened as a very slow, slippery slope.
Right.
With a kind of like 2 or 3 weeks intervals between meeting, and each meeting kind of like pushes the boundary and almost like high school levels, virgin high school levels thing. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, was the basis kind of like, no, we can't do this. No, we can't do that. No, we can't do that. And every time we do a little bit more, against our own best best intentions.
Against your best intentions. I have a feeling he had every intention. I think he did it, from what I'm reading, according to plan, in some respects.
I think he...
And once again, I'm not blaming him. Trust me, you know, you're a beautiful woman. Why not? But, you know, I don't think he does anything by accident. I don't know him. I'm not interviewing him. And we're going to get to why I'm not interviewing him later. But I think he knows exactly what he's doing every step of the way. He's a very intelligent man, and he seems to know exactly what he's doing.
Well, I don't think it was... I'll give you his line. How about that?
Please.
Here's what he would say about it in past interviews. My mistake was that I circumvented morals with ethics.
Mm-hmm.
Ethically, I had her permission.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need her husband's permission. Mm-hmm. She needs her husband's permission.
I need
her permission.
Mm-hmm.
Morally, it was a mistake. Morally, mm-hmm. I should have had everybody aboard.
Right.
And because I didn't, we all had to go through a long and difficult transition. But that transition ultimately made us into better people.
Exactly. And what's interesting to me is that in order for you to be collared by him, and for people that don't know, we know, is you officially become a slave, you had to confess to your husband what was happening.
Exactly, yeah. And I think in that move, whatever his motives were before and whatever his strategy was before, I believe in that move, in a way, we both redeemed ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
It was the hardest thing either of us has to do, because I'm pretty sure he did not want the responsibility for wrecking my family. And, mm-hmm. you know, I'm pretty sure he did not want the responsibility for a slave living on the, you know, my husband is my main provider. He did mm-hmm. not want that responsibility of either wrecking my family or, you know, having to care for me if I find myself mm-hmm. on the street.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But we both took that risk of getting to a place where I can tell my husband the real truth about what happened. And he walked me through it, and he took the responsibility, even if that's a responsibility he should not have, you know. Some the Puritans may say you shouldn't have done that to start with, right? But we're all sinners here.
Sure. But this is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you rehearsed with him what you were going to say to your husband.
True. Yes, I did.
So he's still manipulating that to an extent. You're not, he's helping you out as to what you say, but shouldn't that be a normal conversation or a natural conversation with you and your husband?
That failed so many times. As in, I didn't, when we got to that point, that was when I asked for help. I begged for help, because mm-hmm. I could not do it on my own.
Right.
Because there was a block in communication there that was very difficult. And also I was already in a very difficult position. I mean, imagine telling your spouse that you cheated on them.
Of course. Yeah.
It's a hard conversation to have. And mm-hmm. I was not able to have it without.
What would have happened relationship wise if he hadn't made you confess? Would you have just carried on, or would you have left your husband in the natural course of things? What do you think would happen?
I was playing pretty heavy, close to suicide. Like, I would probably attempt suicide.
Mm.
I couldn't. I was in a gridlock. I would not attempt suicide. I don't think I would have aimed to kill myself, but I think I would have aimed to take myself out of the game in a way. like being hospitalized for being insane seemed the easiest solution at that point. Like just being receiving sort of a blanket forgiveness because I'm just not okay.
Well, let me ask.
Everything fall away, you know.
Well, let me ask another tough question, and that is part of the book, and that is, hard to read because you were in a even though you were being sexually gratified and having a wonderful family life, which a lot of people would be like, you got your cake and eat it too. You were in a really dark place. But let me ask you this. If you didn't have kids, would you have left your husband?
Good one. Mean one. Hey,
bastard. It's not a mean one. I'm just curious because I've never heard you speak on that.
I got to say, you're the most hardcore host I got so far. I thought I got this down, but you're killing me, man.
You don't have to answer if you don't.
Yeah, you don't have to answer anything we ask.
Let's say probably not, because of the level of he had multiple other partners, right? And he not husband material.
Yeah. Like
not even steady partner material. So in a way, right. I was like, I am in a little bit, sure, there were points of our relationship where I would have done anything, jumped off any cliff, and probably would have left my husband, but would have deeply regretted it about 3 weeks later.
Sure, yeah.
Because the way the lifestyle and the way he chooses to live his life, and you know what? I'm supporting him. I support him. But right. That way now, like, would not work for a person who needs, like, I need my husband.
Yeah.
And that's
now you and your husband have like a relationship that's working. What was the best thing that came from having your husband back in your life? Like that steadiness.
Well, he was always in your life, right?
Yeah, I never left.
Yeah, but I meant you took when it was all in the clear.
We're gonna get to that. So get to that. So no, because I want to say because you wrote this book,
right?
And you were, and basically what happened was, what happened? I mean, tell everybody what happened when, you know, you told your husband. Did he suspect?
He knew in a way. I mean, it was. Let me clear this and say, both Joshua and I were doing our best to be as upfront as we dared. And then when I wanted to explore the BDSM scene, I told my husband, I want to explore the BDSM scene. When I went to my first party, I told him I went to my first party. When I wanted to explore, I told him I want to explore. The BDSM was not a secret. My involvement in the sexual exploration was not a secret. However, the presence of Joshua was.
Right.
So
and at that point, you had tried to bring some BDSM into the bedroom and it wasn't taking?
You know.
With your husband?
Yes.
It was taking with Master Joshua. We got that. We got that. It was definitely taken there.
Damn. Let me put my punching gloves on.
I'm not trying to be mean. I'm just asking because I'm curious.
You're just kind of sharp. Yeah.
I'm trying to read between the lines is what it is.
Yeah, yeah. Let me recalibrate. You're not a host. You're a sadist. Okay, got it.
I'm trying to turn you on.
it wasn't the sadism that pulled me in.
I'm not being a sadist. I'm genuinely curious about these things.
Mm-hmm. I tolerate the sadism. That's all. Anyway.
Well, what I was asking was, what is the good stuff your husband brings to your life? Jeez. That's what I was trying to ask.
He's my rock. I mean, when people read the book, the most touching and the most honest thing I usually get, everybody is excited about Joshua. And everybody's kind of thrilled about the road we took together. And everybody's into the sensation. But one of the things I get most is like, you know, the person I have the most respect for in this book is your husband. A friend of mine told me, you know, he played the long game. He saw what he's getting and he put his emotions aside. He put his anger and jealousy and rightful outrage aside. And he put his values on top, because his values, what he told me is sort of like, you know what? Marriage is not a cage. And I am not against exploration in principle. I'm against you having an affair and not telling me, but I don't think you should be locked in. And so I'm going to put my money where my mouth is, or my mouth where my money is, whichever one it is, and let you do what you want to do. I'm not going to stand in your way. I just need you to be a good mother and a good wife.
He genuinely loves you and he set you free.
Yeah. I mean, he still has a hard time saying I love you when he looks at me sometimes. Mm-hmm. but I get that.
But you know.
Yeah, I know. But
and that, and so that's the dichotomy you were at, because you were in love with two men at the same time.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I really love, I mean, he's a gem. I mean, how many people can do that? How many people? And there was like, he played it like a chessboard, right? He was like, okay, I'm going to be here. I'm going to stay here. I'm going to do this whole thing, but we're going to be together and I'm going to be here when she's back. You know, it's not that guy left, but he just gave me enough leash or enough rope to go explore without me having to.
No pun intended. But basically, if you love somebody, set them free. They come back, they really love you. If they don't come back, you never have them to begin with.
You know what's funny? I found myself doing the same thing with Joshua, right? Mm-hmm. 5 years down the line, right?
That's where I want to get to. This is what I want to find out about.
Yeah. So, I found myself doing that same math with Joshua, right?
And that's pretty recent.
Yeah.
Now, what happened there?
Yeah, you probably, like, you're the insider on the story. You probably, one of us needs to lay the background, right?
Right.
You need to speak out loud here.
Well, you started switching and exploring your Dom side.
Yes, I don't identify as his slave anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm not a slave. There's no collar.
Right.
Don't wear a collar anymore.
Right.
In fact, a few
and
days
this is this is after this is after the book is published.
Yes.
And what was the reaction of the book, both in the community and out of the community?
I am careful with social media. I don't put myself out there too much. Mm-hmm. So, and my true identity is concealed.
No, I understand that. But when you get some feedback or reviews, you know who knows what they're talking about, who doesn't. People are like, "Oh my God, I've never seen anything like this." And other people are like, "Yeah, I know all about that, and this is a great story."
Right. I got a lot of. It was very validating because the reviews were a lot like very affirming, very understanding, but also like I found myself in this position. People told me I found myself in this position. I felt what you felt, mm-hmm. especially about the whole introduction to BDSM part. Mm-hmm. Some who had gone through the experience of a tense transition with their partner, or cheating, or hiding, or keeping secrets, people who went through that
mm-hmm.
really resonated with that. And mostly what I got was about the transition into BDSM. They were like, oh, I felt that. I've mm-hmm. been through that. Also, I got really like heartwarming reviews or replies from people who are coming out of the closet mm-hmm. and who are going through similar processes. And a lot of vanilla people were like very, very supportive, because they were like, they responded to, I mean, I put myself out there in that book in a way that makes me cringe all the time. When you're talking about it, I'm like, why did I publish this
it's
again?
It's so forthcoming. I mean, it's amazing. It's you're putting out really just in some respects an open wound.
Yeah,
and
literally,
and a story of liberation.
So it's,
I mean, the best really, and the worst of you,
right? Really, like embarrassing shit. I mean, embarrassing when people start asking me, when I meet people in person and they start asking me, the book. Let me fill you in here. The book has certain mental breakdown scenes, so mm-hmm. panic attacks, self-cutting mm-hmm. stuff that I am super ashamed of, right?
You shouldn't
I don't want to talk about it. It's like embarrassing, like how in pieces and messed up I was, right?
There's nothing to be ashamed of.
Hospitalized for trying to kill myself, and I also had a very bad breakdown, and it was very public too. So I understand. Sometimes it's just what has to happen. Like, it's not something you can control. It's just something you're going through, and you just have to see it through.
No, thank you for saying that. And really, I'm like, oh, really? You look so composed.
Well, I put myself back together again, and that takes time. I mean, this was 5 years ago. So,
and you did too, Karma. Put yourself back together again, and you look very composed. And you know, as I said, there's a lot to the story. I mean, you don't have to be in the BDSM scene to really be engaged in the story. It really is. It's a hardcore Lifetime movie in the sense. It's about you finding what really turns you on. And speaking of turning on people, we are now sponsored by Tactical Soap. Tactical, and you were saying that Master Joshua, it feels like he was made out of, you know, he had pheromones coming out of his body. If you really want pheromones coming off your body, get Tactical Soap. This is soap made with pheromones. They have three or nine different types: Bond, Durden, and Maverick. 1, 2, and 3. And they've got soaps, they've got colognes, they have lotions. Go to Tactical Soap. And once again, there will be a link in the description. You can get your Tactical Soap.
You need holding up signs and stuff.
Yeah. And you could be somebody that just has that magnetism like Master Joshua. Now,
oh my God, I need that bit recorded. Like,
I'll send
magnetism like Master Joshua.
Yes, I will send it. I will send that to you. You can send that to Master Joshua, and you can ignore everything else I've said about him being a manipulator. But anyway, so here's where the story gets crazy. Now, as I said, the book's published, right? People love it. As I say, this is one of the most interesting stories I've ever heard, and
it won an award, by the way.
What award did it win?
IPPI, the Independent Press Awards.
That's great.
Yeah, it won the IPPI Award in the category of sexuality. Right. I'm just doing a media blast to all the big papers and all that.
That's wonderful. You were doing all this press and all these podcasts with Master Joshua, promoting the book. And was that where it fell apart with him?
Yeah.
Yeah?
As long as I was his slave, right, and working with him on his goals, I was happy to do that because I wasn't. It was COVID. I wasn't working on anything else at the time. My paper closed. I lost my job before that, and my paper closed anyway during COVID. So I was working freelance. I didn't have anything better to do than to be his slave, and I was looking for my path. Mm-hmm. I was working on the book. That's what I was doing.
Right.
During the
global pandemic,
right,
which hit the whole S&M scene hard.
Right. I mean, there was no S&M scene. I had my own private little polycule there, so I was grateful for that.
No, I mean, people were doing Zoom stuff, but that's not the same.
Right. Definitely not.
Yeah. So, because we've had a lot of Doms on the show talk about how tough it was during COVID, you know, they had to do OnlyFans, but they also did private sessions on Zoom, but it's not the same. It's not as visceral.
It's not anything like it.
Yeah.
But yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's fun.
It's like, just like sex on Zoom. I mean, great.
Yeah.
Nice.
Well, yeah. I mean, you can bust a nut, but it's not the same. What I've noticed, and I was telling Nicole this the other night, is people don't know how to communicate anymore. There's people that were the best of friends before COVID. They were isolated. After COVID, they don't know how to talk to each other.
We do not. COVID was great for me and my relationships.
Really?
Actually, well, yeah, because...
you got to compartmentalize?
I lost everybody who wasn't integral to my life. Mm-hmm. And a lot of... it was fascinating for me to see how I am without all the bullshit. The core people, the people who are important to me and are part of my life, stayed part of my life. Mm-hmm. I didn't have to part long with my, and we became much tighter during that time and much more together. And I loved it. It was like, I was isolated, but I was isolated with my own family and with my kink family. That was amazing. Right.
That's great.
So I
and shut out the rest of the world.
Yeah. I mean, it was actually so much easier, right? Mm-hmm.
Then no, I understand.
Having to deal with all the people and the rules and the frameworks and the all the hoops you have to jump through.
I mean, a lot of people have been going through that, and that's why now that everybody's out and they're trying to communicate amongst each other, they're having a hard time. Whereas before, people did have a level of decorum, or at least try to be nice, or actually knew how to communicate with people that are not in their scene. Now it's weird. It's just people. There's political shifts, there's sexual shifts, there's all this other stuff, and everybody's just isolated.
I don't experience it that way.
You don't think so? You think it's a different thing for you?
Well, that's not my current experience. I mean, it might be something that is moving through the media or something that...
it's not the media. It's really, I mean, maybe it's an LA thing. Maybe New York's a whole different thing because we know how friendly people are in New York. But I was going to say... And I was born in Brooklyn, and by the way, the time has flown by, but I do have to ask you this now. Yes. How did you get into doming? Well, because you are a sub, and you were really intrigued by the sub. How did you end up becoming a dom?
Even in the book, there's parts where I speak about, you know, the sadism. I definitely have a sadist in me. Mm-hmm. I definitely enjoy inflicting pain. And I hope you could tell by this interview that I have, quite an amount of charisma myself, and I can take.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
I'm happy to take the lead. Mm-hmm. It's just like I am happy to take the lead when people need me to take the lead. When there's somebody who can take the lead, I find that quite attractive because I am forthcoming. I'm a little bit in people's face. Like, I'm keeping my voice down and trying to be super polite. But when I'm and accommodating to you, but when I'm in my element, I'm just kind of like, I'm a little hardcore a little bit.
Well, obviously. I read the book. I know.
So most men find me intimidating, and it's easier with most men to take the lead and be the dominant and get what I want from them than to be in the submissive position. The reason I was submissive to Joshua was simply because he was dominant to me.
Right.
Like, it's kind of like dogs in the park, you know. Mm-hmm. One of them will lay down.
You hear that, Nicole?
One of them will lay down and roll over. The other one will be like, okay, I guess we know who's boss. That's what happened.
Right.
I went through a long period of, I'm a very strong woman myself. And I was trying to date men that I saw as like more stronger. I would say the word I would use is more powerful. They seem to have more self-control than me, and they seem to have things that I was missing. But then I realized I just wasn't cut out for them. They need someone that's like weaker than me. So I've been recently trying to date men that are more sensitive, and it's going a lot better. Like, I'm enjoying it more. Mm-hmm. So I have taken a shift where I've now become the alpha in most of my relationships.
It's fun, right? I mean, in a way, it's
look at that smile. Yes, it's fun.
It's fun. Yeah, I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying it a lot also because
it's a new transition for me, because I spent so long always wanting like someone stronger than me that it's but I'm in my 30s, and like I just am at the point where I'm who I am, and I'm not going to become soft or sensitive at this age. I'm only going to get harder technically. So I'm ready to take the reins in the relationship if I have to.
Yeah, usually it's the men getting harder, right?
that's the idea. And I know some doms that actually will sub for a night so they can know what it's like. So do you think that being a sub for so many years made you a better dom?
I believe that being, yes, absolutely. But I also believe that you know, just being in a very intense exchange for these many years made me a better Dom. But I am no longer a slave, but I'm definitely still MNT. Like,
right.
I'm still, you know, taking lessons here.
Right. So you would classify yourself as a switch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would. I mean, with a person who is dominant to me, I can be submissive. So far, it was only Master Joshua, and I don't really want it to be anybody else.
So far. No, I'm kidding. But but
you want to go there?
You have no idea. Yeah,
do I need to take out my weapons and go like, oh, I'm bigger than yours?
You got stuff that makes my little wussy riding crop look like nothing. But here's
on Zoom, so your wussy little riding crop actually does look like nothing. It disappears every time you move it.
I know, because I got the whole thing. But yes. Yeah. So anyway, but. Here's where we end.
Ooh, I'm so scared. Yeah.
No. What I was gonna say, and if I have this correct, and correct me if I'm wrong, now you're doming your husband. Or you're playing with your husband. Let's put it that way. You're playing with your husband.
That is one of Master Joshua's proudest achievements. Yes. Not. Where did you get that from? It's not in the book.
I know it's not in the book. I did my research. I do my homework.
Damn, man.
You said that on the show.
Cool. Yes. Very good research. Yes, to an extent, we're not in a... Let me clarify that we're not in a dynamic.
He's not your slave.
He's not my slave. He's not my anything. He's my husband. And it's he does not even really like it. When BDSM language comes into the bedroom, because he's sort of like, save that to your other people. It's not me. He's kind of allergic to it now because.
But he is engaging in some play now.
Yes, he is, because play is fun, you know, and there's a lot of advantages to having a former sex slave who's been trained for 5 years to be a rape. So I'm like, I know what I'm doing now, and I know how to do it well. And I'm like, and he is happy to be in the position of like, how about I'm going to tell you what to do and you do it. And you don't have to ask yourself, am I doing the right thing? Or how does this feel? Or does she like it? Or I'm going to tell you exactly what you need to do and exactly what you need to know. And you don't have to feel any self-doubt. Any step of the way, just lay back, baby. I'm gonna tell you what to do.
That's the dynamic. That's the power dynamic, and he's enjoying that.
It's on, yeah, but it's not. You know, if we're talking, it's not 24/7 anything.
Oh, of course, no, obviously.
Just a subtle little.
It's
get in the bedroom.
See, I'm not a lifestyler, and that's the thing. To me, and it's just only me. It's the icing on the cake. It's not the cake. I know some people, it's the whole cake. For me, I like a little of this, but I like other intimacy too. So right now you're actually getting your icing and your cake.
Yes. So, you know, sometimes I do miss being a slave.
Right.
It came with a certain amount of like, a little bit like being a kid in a way. No offense to all the slaves, but I mean, I didn't mean it like being childlike. I meant like being trusting and having the world be a simple place, because you only look at your parent. you just hold somebody's hand and follow. So that had a certain charm to it.
You like being told what to do and knowing that the person that's telling you knows what they're talking about, and you can follow them. You like them.
It's not even that. It's not even that.
What is it?
It's more like I'm not questioning. It's not about I know where you. It's not about I know that you know where you're going, because sometimes he didn't, right? And I knew that, but I was like, it's almost like a religion in a way.
But it's
a religion. It's sort of like, you're my prophet. You're my, you're the thing that
you're my guru.
I confirmed to you. So if you're wrong, I'll be wrong with you, and it will be okay.
Mm-hmm. And Master Joshua is still in your life.
Yeah, we're
still very, a friend, still a mentor,
still everything except slave. And I can demonstrate how that works. Like yesterday, we met at his place with friends, and we were talking, and I made a jab at him, or you know, started to talk about something that made him a little bit uncomfortable, and he was like, "Okay, that's the end of that topic." And I was like, "I don't see no collar." So, as I was saying,
and wow,
we all laughed, and I continued talking about the topic I wanted to talk about, but you know, sensitive to him, like not stepping on his toes or anything,
right?
Like I would respect any other human being, but like, you know, right. What? You can't tell me what to say anymore, and that felt really good.
I'm sure it did. So, in conclusion,
yes,
you 5 years ago went on a journey to find yourself. You didn't even know you were finding yourself, but you went on a journey for an article. And you are now in a place where you are satisfied in all sorts of ways. You've written an amazing book, and you went from being just a culture editor, a culture writer for a conservative newspaper to somebody that's established in the scene. You still have your loving husband. You still have your two wonderful children, and you still have your kink.
And I actually still have, you know.
And you still have Master Joshua.
I have Joshua. I don't know how to call him.
But he's not your master. You have hot guy Joshua. You have your husband. You have your children. You have it all. And it's all out in the open. And it's an amazing story. It's an amazing book.
Thank you.
And tell everybody how they can get that book.
Surviving Master Joshua. Google. It'll come up on all the relevant outlets.
Don't Google Karma Seg because you're gonna get the mother load. Surviving Master Joshua, and you survive Master Joshua, and thrive.
Yep, that's my legacy.
that's your legacy. And Nicole, Karma has also started her own publishing arm.
Oh wow!
Through that,
where you're publishing sexually. I don't want to say graphic, but yeah, I don't want to say sexually graphic material, but sexually themed material independently, because
yeah,
this is a book that's it's hard to, you're not going to take this to Simon and Schuster to publish. You got to do it yourself, and you got to really be DIY with this. And other people have not maybe as fascinating a story, but just as sexual a story as yours,
right?
And they need publishing, and you help publish them. Tell. Cool. Tell Nicole about your publishing arm.
Well, currently, the publishing arm is called carnaculturepublishing.com, and that's a website. And it is a self-assisted publishing. That is, people come with the books that they want to publish, and if I deem them good enough to publish, mm-hmm. I help them through the stages of self-publishing, as in, they can use the name of the publication if they would rather not run themselves, and they can use the LLC that mm-hmm. I created to publish from. But essentially, they keep all the profits. I don't need their rights. I don't need their profits, because I know it's slim picking for small prints, small presses. So they keep their profits, and mm-hmm. I help them to publish the book, and it's a la carte services, basically.
That's wonderful. Go to carnalculture.com. Absolutely. If you want to get this book published, a story published, and I'll tell you, like I said, you are fascinating. Fascinating woman. You have a fascinating story. And anything else you would like to promote, please go ahead.
Can I?
Well, trust me, I did three commercials. You can do whatever you want. Go right ahead.
So there's one new project that I'm working on, and I'm super excited about. The publishing company is called carnaculturepublishing.com.
I'm sorry.
I am working on carnaculturenyc.com, which is a blog for to do with the kinky culture of NYC. It being kink, fetish, somatic cultures, everything from the lightest end where, like, you know, how's it called? Sacred dance parties and cuddle mm-hmm. parties to swing parties, and also stories from the lifestyle or articles about the lifestyle. And I want to invite everybody who is who has a hand in this profession, who's involved in this, to send in articles. And this blog is for people to publish themselves and promote themselves with their articles. Of course, they have to be well written, but I will edit them to make sure they are. And mm-hmm. so if you have anything, send it to kernelculture@gmail.com. That's kernelculture@gmail.com. And around September, this blog launches with full Wonderful. Content.
Wonderful. I can't wait to read it.
Thank you. You're adorable.
Oh, thank you, Karma. I know we got a little deeper than you were expecting, but I had a great time listening to your story and having some gaps filled in, and I think you're fantastic.
No, oh, same.
Yes. And Nicole,
do you say all this stuff off there too?
What's that? Only to my guests wearing masks. Nicole, speaking yes. of self-publishing, you have a poetry book out.
I do. Oh. So you can find me at Nicole Six Books on Instagram and Nicole H Six on Facebook. And then in my bio is a link to my new poetry book on lulu.com.
Can you repeat that?
The audio came out. It's her book, Slow Burn, the poetry book, is on lulu.com.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Congratulations. It's a big deal.
Thank you.
And she's actually making some money off it.
Yeah.
How do you how tell me
I was first published in 2012, and then I just built a fan base, so it's just the built-in fan base. That's how I have people that are genuine readers of my work, and they just like it. So this is my fourth book and people are still buying it, so I'm happy about that.
Wow. She has That's a loyal awesome. Fan base of submissive men. That's how she does it. And everybody, yes, well, as you do too. And mm-hmm. I am goth comedian on all social media. I had a great time. Everybody have a wonderfully creepy week. Bye.
Bye. Bye.